Assemblyman LeSueur will focus on local and federal government interactions in disaster response.
Thank you very, very much. If I would have known as in law enforcement how they made the laws in the state, I'd have been a little more careful when I went to enforce them after being up there all that time. I want to tell you a little bit about the Cedar fires and what happened during that period of time, but I want to give a little bit of background on some things. There's things that happen sometimes to law enforcement, and I don't know, maybe it happens in other areas, but I guess it was about, first time it ever happened to me was about 35 or 40 years ago when San Diego was considerably smaller. I was driving north about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was working on highway cars. That was before, I was on the police department then. That was before the highway patrol had taken over all the freeways and highways in California. In San Diego Police Department still operated on all the freeways and all the highways. And it was a little bit foggy out. And I noticed a car about a quarter mile ahead of me. It was driving just a little bit erratic. So I kind of eased up behind the car. When I did, I noticed the car slowed down. And I decided, I'm going to stop this guy. There's something wrong here. So I stopped the car, put the red light on, car pulled over to the curb, and I got out of my car. If a person as a police officer wants to live and finish their career, doesn't sit in the car and comb their hair and all this, they get right out. I got out of the car, I took about one step, and I got this strange feeling. I got a slight rush of adrenaline. I thought, something is really, really wrong. I took about two steps, and it was almost like somebody screamed at me, "There's a gun." I walked up to the car and laid the muzzle of the gun next to the guy's head. I said, "Where's it at? Where's the gun?" He didn't say anything. I said, "Where's the gun?" He said, "Underneath the newspaper next to my hand. Put your hands on the steering wheel." So I handcuffed him, took him out of the car. There's a snub-nosed .38, fully loaded, fully cocked, under the newspaper by his hand. And I tell you that because this happens to a lot of police officers. It doesn't happen that often. Some guys call it a gut feeling. Some of them call it a sixth sense. Some of them say sometimes there's bells and whistles and flags that start to go up. On the 25th of October last year, my wife and I were laying in bed. It was almost exactly 5:30, and I woke up all of a sudden. I thought, what is wrong? Something is terribly wrong. And I got up and I walked outside. And it was just shortly past dawn, and it was kind of like when you walk into a room and there's a real bad fluorescent light. That's what dawn looked like at that time. And I looked to the north, and the sky was full of heavy, heavy clouds of smoke, and to the east, west, everywhere. The only place I didn't see smoke was behind me down toward the south. I thought, oh, geez, this is a problem. In the early 70s, I was a deputy sheriff. I had worked the Laguna Fire, which was a devastating fire. Destroyed a great deal of the East County of San Diego. But when I got up and I walked outside that morning, I knew this was way, way, way worse. I went inside and I told my wife, I said, you know, it looks like half the world's on fire. It's bad out there. So I went in and I turned the television on. And they were talking about the fire and how the winds had picked up in the middle of the night. They were blowing even harder than them. And how fast this fire was moving. I would later find out, according to some of the fire officials, that 1 acre was being consumed every 2 seconds. I was not aware at that time that while I slept last night in an area of Lakeside, when the fire came through, people were burned to death in a garage trying to get in their car, or burned to death on the road trying to get out. There's one elderly couple that ran outside. They couldn't escape. They jumped in the swimming pool. They're about in their late 70s or what have you. And the man had a hat that was kind of a terry cloth hat, and he kept wetting the hat and dunking his wife. And he stayed in the pool and watched their house burn down. I didn't know that at that time that in my district 2,000 homes would be lost and 13 people would be burned to death and other people would be burned to the point they were maimed for life. I had no idea of that. But I knew it was a bad fire. After showering and watching TV a little bit longer, I got on the telephone to call a friend of mine who happens to be the chief of staff for Congressman Hunter here in San Diego. I said, "You're aware of what's going on right now?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Been watching on television, Wendell. They say we're not using any aircraft." He says, "You know," he said, "I just got off the phone with the congressman back in Washington, D.C. He said he's already been to the Pentagon, and he's been to the White House. He has it cleared. F-65, C-130s. They're equipped to fight fires. All we need is a request from California, and they'll ship them out. All we need is a request." "Well, who's that request come from?" He said, "I don't know. It's got to be somebody pretty high up." And quite frankly, you know, I'm really low on the food chain in California. So I called my chief of staff in Sacramento. I said, who's the head of California Division of Forestry? I need the phone number." I got the phone number, and of course I wasn't, you know, you never get right straight through to anybody. Not that time of the morning on a weekend. I said, "I need to talk to the director." I said, "Well, let me see if we can find out where he came back," and he gave me a phone number of the number two person. And while we were watching this on television from the news copters, I got on the phone with this person. I said, "Look, we have some major problems in San Diego. Congressman down here has already cleared us to the Pentagon. I have a home phone number for the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. All you need to do is call him and request it. They'll have 5 C-130s en route and all the helicopters we need. And there was a pause. "Well, I don't think right now we're going to do that." "And why is that?" "Well, you can't fly helicopters in San Diego right now." I looked toward the television, and they were showing all this fire burning everything to pieces. I said, "Well, I'll get back to you." I did a little research. I found out it had been about a month or so before that at the Marine Corps. Had put out about a 6,000-acre fire on Camp Pendleton with their helicopters. I didn't know at the time that the Marine Corps Bambi buckets hold about 3 times what the water that ours on the Sheriff's Department held. I didn't know at the time that they were there. We could use them anytime we wanted them. So I called a congressman back. I said, I didn't make a whole lot of headway with this person. He said, "Well, have him call me." "All right, I'll have him call you." In the meantime, his chief of staff and I had called State Senator Hollingsworth and State Assemblyman George Plesha. We were all down there together, and we were saying, "I can't believe they won't take these planes. Can't believe it. I mean, even if they can't use them right now, let's get them out here. Let's station them so when this begins to clear a little bit, the smoke, we can get them in the air and start fighting these fires with them." And Hollingsworth said, "Let's call the governor." "Okay, we'll call the governor." So we got on the phone, we called the governor. Now, right up front, I'm going to tell you, I have a certain amount of bias here. I'm not a fan of Governor Davis, former Governor Davis. And the reason I'm not is that there was, the entire time I've been in the state assembly, there's been no communication with us in the assembly from the governor. And there was not to be any communication with the governor on that day. We got a hold of his staff, and they would not connect us with the governor. They told us that all the resources that could be had were being had at that particular time. The requests had already been made for the military, C-130s. We told them no, the request hadn't. That goes to the Department of Defense. That request had not been made. I'd like to have the governor call or speak to the governor right then. Make a long story short, there were a total of 4 phone calls made to the governor. And at no time did we ever speak to him. That night, we went down to the Heartland Fire Communications Center and to the chief that was on duty and said, "Here's what we have, chief. You got 5 C-130s and all the helicopters you can use. Can you use any of those?" He said, "We can use the helicopters when we get the planes out here. Yeah, that'd be great." I said, "Well, here's the problem. We can't get CDF to request them. Can you call him? Here's the phone number. Here's the guy's name." He said, "I'll call him." Went back to his office, called him. Came out about 10 minutes later. He says, "I don't understand it. I don't understand it." He says, "They won't request them. They won't request the aircraft." So, okay, well, we'll try again later. We went out to see where the fire was burning. Right in the area of the Cedar Fire. I had been out as a deputy sheriff. I'd been out my first day during the Laguna Fire was 33 hours. I'd been out a lot in the fires at that time. Cedar Fire, or the Laguna Fire, is a pretty good sized fire, but I had never seen a fire like the one I saw when we went out there. Now, you got to understand something, too. There were firefighters from everywhere fighting this fire. And it's not an 8-hour shift. You fight the fire until you're relieved. And some of those people fight fires for easy a day, with no relief. And that's what they were doing at that time. We had out-of-state firefighters with everything. We said, "Okay, tomorrow morning, let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can get a hold of these people. Let's see if we can talk just a little bit of sense in them." I have a friend in the state assembly. And he's got a saying, when something happens and it's really good, he says, "You know, don't you just love it when a plan comes together? The problem is, if you don't have a plan, it's hard to get it to come together." And what we were beginning to see was that there was not a plan. This was a fire of such proportions, a disaster of such proportions. The people on the ground were fighting to save what they could, including their own lives. The people we talked to, 500 miles away, I don't know what they were fighting outside of cooperation. Well, we spent a lot of time the next day trying to get a hold of the governor, trying to get the person to go ahead and request those aircraft, to absolutely no avail. So we said, "Okay, let's put a little pressure on them." We called all the mayors from East County. We had the mayor from Lemon Grove, Sandy, El Cajon, La Mesa. We had 3 state assemblymen, 1 state senator, chief of staff for a local congressman. We held a news conference. We said, "Here's the problem, folks. They won't do this. We're trying to get equipment out here, trying to get the stuff together, trying to make this thing work. One person is holding it up. None of the guys out there fighting the fires. None of the police out there working with them One person 500 miles away is holding this up. Went down and talked to a bunch of firefighters that night. They said, we had been told that we weren't going to get any more equipment, that we're going to be on our own starting tomorrow. I said, don't stop doing any news conferences. Shortly after you told them, or you guys were on the air, we were told we're getting a lot more stuff. Don't stop. It's okay. The next morning, at a news conference in San Diego, all the politicians trotted out with their yellow turnout jackets on, and the governor flew in. And the governor said, the reason the aircraft cannot fly in San Diego is because of the heavy marine layer. This is during a Santa Ana. Now, I've lived in San Diego since I was 6 months old, which is slightly over 60 years or so ago. And I have never seen a Santa Ana with a marine layer. And I've seen a lot of Santa Anas and a lot of marine layers and a lot of coastal eddies. I'm going to meet that guy someday. Got a phone call right directly after that from the congressman. He said, I just finished talking with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We're going to move the C-130s out there so when it clears enough that they can fly, we can get them in the air and get them started laying down retardant. When Thursday came, the fire started Saturday. When Thursday came, went to my office, and those of you that were here will remember that the smoke was so thick that you couldn't see more than, 50 yards maybe, something like that, if you could see that much. Most people that were out were wearing a mask for a breathing. And I heard this noise. I looked up and I saw four military helicopters flying east, all carrying buckets. And I thought, well, gee, not bad. Let's see. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Pretty good response time. This is only Thursday. And I was wondering at the time, we've got the United States Federal Forest Service, our California service, departments from all over. All over the state and outside the state. I want to tell you something that I found out. And we've got to do something to help the firefighters. I tried to do something in legislation this year, but I couldn't. Every time you have a citation written to you and you go to court, there's a little bit of that money goes for training for police officers. They call it the California Commission on Peace Officers Standards and Training. It's a funding source that makes sure these people are trained all the time. Firefighters don't have this. They don't have it. Now, they train and all this, but they don't have it. Fortunately, the wind changed, and the fire began to blow back toward the east, began to burn areas that it had jumped and new areas there. So we had problems in the Julian area and all such as that. But it was such that it was an onshore flow. It was a coastal flow. It wasn't a Santa Ana, so they were, it was light winds. And in a very short period of time, they were able to get the fire basically put out. Directly after that, Governor Gray Davis announced that he was appointing a Blue Ribbon Commission on the fires. We're going to find out what went wrong, what we could do to improve it. And I looked at the names on the fire. There was only one person on the commission that the fire had touched their district. And the thought that ran through my mind was, well, this is a cover your tail. This is going to be pablum. Well, in the meantime, time passed. We got a new governor, a swearing-in ceremony. And I went down and I asked for an appointment to speak to the governor. And surprisingly enough, after I tried many times to talk to the former governor, I got a call shortly, and he said, yeah, the governor will see you at some such time. So I went down and began to talk to the governor about the fire. I said, Governor, I want to be honest with you, Governor. We'll talk right straight up to you. Nobody on that commission had a lot of damage in their district. I said, over 2,000 homes destroyed. I had 13 people killed. Senator Hollingsworth, whose district encompasses mine, had even more homes destroyed and more people killed. And I want to know why we're not on that commission. I want to know why you have Democrats from Coronado sitting on that. How much burned? Who burned out in Coronado? How much interplay did they have? And you know, the first time I met the governor, when you first talked to him, he doesn't say a whole lot. I said, I'm going to tell you something, Governor. If this is a whitewash, I said, God have mercy, because I said, I'm going to go after him in the news. I'm going to go out there. We are doing some investigation of our own. I said, Governor, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked. He said, what questions? So I began to ask him questions, tell him questions. He says, yeah, you're right. He says, you know what? They need an honest answer, too. I said, well, I don't know how easy that's going to be to come by, but they sure need to be asked. About 2 weeks later, I got a phone call, and it was the governor's office, and he said, we want you to be a guest panelist on the Blue Ribbon Commission when it meets in San Diego tomorrow. I said, okay. Now, I have to tell you, between that time I spoke with the governor and that time, I wrote letters to the head of CDF and letters to the head of the federal firefighters, federal forestry. And I asked a number of questions in there. And the questions I asked were questions that people had asked me from my district. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why didn't this happen? Why was a sheriff's helicopter with a bucket full of water 3 minutes away from a drop called off when it first started? Why weren't any of the bombers launched? Well, there were all a lot of reasonable answers to that. There are certain rules that CDF has with regards to flight times and when they shut down. So I found out during the hearing by the commission, but I also found out that their flight times do not coincide with federal forestry flight times. The federal forestry would have been able to fly for an additional hour. The reason a helicopter was called off was because it was too close to the time they couldn't fly. We have pictures that the residents took of the fire when it began. We have pictures of it when it's less than 20 acres. This is about the time the sheriff's helicopter was en route. There was a second helicopter that just put on a bucket was going to be en route. And there were two bombers sitting on the tarmac in Ramona. And it's not the pilot's fault that they didn't fly. And when the head of CDF was testifying in San Diego, she began to talk about politicians that stick their nose in business where it doesn't belong, and politicians that comment on things during the heat of battle and they ought to keep their mouths shut, and politicians that have destroyed the morale of the firefighters when they're fighting this fire, and politicians that are doing things and saying things they have no business doing or saying. And because of the public pressure, she said, we made cosmetic drops that were very expensive and did nothing. Think about that statement. We did cosmetic drops that were very expensive and did nothing. The way I interpret that is, we wanted to fake you guys out, let you think that we were doing something when we weren't. And it was my turn to talk. I said, if it's sticking my nose in where it doesn't belong, when I'm calling for help, then I'm guilty. If the fact that over 2,000 homes were destroyed and 13 people were killed, and I was calling for you to help, and you ignored me, a stick in my nose and where it doesn't belong, then I'm guilty. But if it's also true that you refused to take planes that were offered to you and helicopters that were offered to you when you could have used them, then there is too much rigidity in the top administration of your organization. And there's no logic in its absence of any common sense. We went through a total of about 4 more hearings. And each time we had a hearing, we had additional information that was given to us about what had happened and what could happen and how things could be prevented. I asked the question to one of the administration. I said, I went on your website, and your website says that you are to remove vegetation that has been killed, or is dead, or is infested from growth areas. So I would like to ask you this question, if this in fact is true. How many trees that were killed by the bark beetle did you remove in the lagunas? He said, well, let's start with the Cuyamancas. I said, no, let's not. Those all burned down. Let's talk about the Laguna Mountains. How many? How many? Tell me. There was no answer. I said, I know the answer. The answer is zero. So let me ask you another question. How many controlled burns have you done in San Diego in the last 5 years? None. How many fire breaks have you cut in San Diego in the last 5 years? None. So why won't you allow the military, who are already trained in dropping water, to drop water? Well, the aircraft are not certified, the pilots are not certified. I said, really? There was a rescue of a young PFC female in Iraq a short time back. The helicopters were flown into an area they had never been in before. They used night vision devices. They flew in that area without incident. PFC was rescued. The troops were withdrawn, and not one helicopter received any damage. But you're telling me they're not good enough to drop water on a fire. Those helicopters are stationed at Miramar Marine Corps Air Base, and they're there now. And you're telling me that the United States Marine Corps could take a fully equipped combat marine, drop him on the pitching deck of a frigate out in the Atlantic or in the Pacific, and they can't drop water on a fire. You're telling me that they can take their helicopters into combat, but they're not certified to drop water. And the gentleman from the United States Department of Forestry said, you don't understand. They're not qualified. I said, let me ask you this. Where did your pilots get all their training? Well, most of our pilots are former military. I said, really? I said, you know what? Is it possible you have a turf problem? He said, you know, let me tell you something, Assemblyman. We spend a lot of time working with the military, writing these manuals out with regards to what we have to do and what is safe to fly in and how we fly in. I said, wait. you hear what you just said? You said we spend a lot of time with the military writing these manuals. They can write your manuals, but they're not good enough to fly? You understand what you just said? Now, I want to tell you something. I want to really make this clear. The firefighters that fought those brush fires were some of the bravest people I've ever seen when I was out there. The most gallant actions that have occurred in our backcountry occurred during this fire. I saw homes that these firefighters stopped and took a stand, and everything around that house was burned down, but that house was saved. So one firefighter in my area from Novato lost his life trying to protect the property of people in San Diego. And I will tell you this. If they had been in a military action and displayed the kind of gallantry and bravery they displayed, they'd probably all have been awarded a Silver Star. So make no mistake, I am not criticizing it. What I am criticizing is there is a problem with government when government is so rigid that when something happens that they haven't planned for, they don't know how to respond. Now, if I had never done anything in my life where I ended up in a situation where there was a little bit of action going on, I would say I shouldn't speak. If I hadn't worked in a situation where people could be critically injured or killed if something wasn't done properly, if I wasn't able to move and mold my actions to the situation at hand, then I have no right to speak. But for 11 years, I commanded the SWAT team. And we knew one thing. We trained for the absolute worst, so anything else was easy. And yeah, we had to do things and change things around during the course of an operation so we could be successful in it. But that was not there at the head of those organizations. Neither of those organizations. There was a quote, and we were told by the head of the agency that you cannot put a fire out with an airplane. It is virtually impossible to put a fire out with an airplane. The next person to testify was the head of the flight operations for the California Division of Forestry. He said, I'm a fixed-wing pilot, and I also am qualified in rotorcraft helicopters. And there's not a fire I can't put out. So I began wondering, why is it the guys that do the work say you can do this, and the people at the top say you can't do this? So I did some research, and then I sent a Freedom of Information letter to the director of California Division of Forestry. And what I asked in that letter was, what is your background in education in firefighting? How many courses in fire science have you taken and successfully completed? How many fires have you actually been involved in the fighting of that fire? Not an administrator, but the actual fighting of that fire. That was kind of like the same question, you know, when I ask about how many fire breaks have you cut? How many trees did you take down? How many control breaks? I didn't get an answer. The reason I did not get an answer is the person is not a qualified firefighter. Nor has this person ever been. Now, sometimes you do things and you say to yourself, if I do this, I'm going to create a real bad taste in some people's mouth over here. Now, I like firefighters. I was a police officer, law enforcement for 31 years, and we worked together many, many times. And the thought went through my mind that these are really my friends. And how many of them are going to misunderstand what I say? How many of them are going to think that I'm criticizing them? On the other side, I thought, over 2,000 homes were lost. In my district, 13 people died. And I had driven out through Crest, and I had driven out through Harbison Canyon. Harbison Canyon looked like it was bombed with napalm. Pitts Valley, Ramona, Julian, Alpine. Right after the fire, I drove through Cuyamacas, and I thought I was in a B-grade science fiction movie. So I wrote a letter. Now I'll read you part of that letter. Dear Governor Schwarzenegger, it is with great regret that I write you today, after much thought and pondering over the facts of the Cedar Fire, to ask that you remove, I'm not going to read the names, the director and a deputy director from their positions with the Department of Forestry. On the second page, one of the paragraphs says, 13 people in my district died along with one firefighter. One couple died in their car in the garage while they were trying to escape the fire. Another couple died on the road trying to escape the fire. Another couple jumped in the swimming pool, repeatedly plunging themselves down in the water in order to save their lives while watching their home be destroyed around them. Another family woke up to an explosion in their home, only to see it orange with flames. They just barely made it out. Another couple died on Old Verona Road while they were trying to call for help on their cell phone. No one was able to get to them. The San Diego region was extremely short of firefighting equipment and manpower. At that very time, neither the congressman, the state senator, nor I could convince the deputy director to request military aerial firefighting aircraft to be moved into California for use on the fires when the CDF deemed it appropriate. The next page, one of the things I wrote was, the director of CDS stated during the meeting of the Blue Ribbon Fire Commission in San Diego that aircraft cannot put out fires. However, her head flight operations officer testified that he was both a fixed wing and a helicopter pilot and could put any fire out with an aircraft. The director of CDF testified at the same meeting that because of political pressure, they made cosmetic drops that were extremely expensive and ineffective. Governor Schwarzenegger, if this is correct, and I have no reason to doubt it, the following questions need to be answered. Why would any leader make cosmetic drops during such a devastating fire, regardless of any or all perceived political pressure? When lives are being lost, homes burned to the ground, why would any leader order cosmetic drops for any reason? When the San Diego region's firefighting resources are spread extremely thin due to mutual aid requirements and requirements of the firestorms in the region, why would any leader authorize cosmetic drops? This state cannot afford leadership that is inflexible. This state cannot afford leadership at any level that fails to employ common sense. And this state cannot afford leadership at any level that ignores logical decision-making. The state cannot permit people to remain in leadership positions who refuse to bring valuable firefighting equipment to our state to be positioned for use at the first opportunity. And this state cannot afford any person to remain in a leadership position who permits, authorizes, or allows any action to be taken during a critical incident to fool the people. California cannot afford cosmetic drops to be made at any time. And this state cannot afford any person to remain in a leadership position that refuses to allow a helicopter carrying a bucket full of water to be turned away from dropping it on a fire. The state cannot afford to permit the current leadership of CDF to remain in place. You know, I thought a lot about that before I sent that particular letter. I talked to the governor's appointment secretary, and I said, you know, it really bothered me to send that letter, because I was saying some pretty serious things about people that could affect their career very adversely. But when I drive through my district and I see what happened, and I remember the attitudes that I encountered, that I know that that was the right thing to do. Senator Bill Campbell was the head of the Blue Ribbon Commission on Fires. Senator Campbell said that if we continue doing what we are doing and government continues to act and react like it is, then these incidents will occur again. If we write this report and we lay it on the shelf and we don't give those things that are needed to our firefighters, that we don't take the precautions that are necessary to give them every advantage to beat a fire, and give homeowners every advantage that their homes will not be destroyed, then we have wasted our time and the taxpayers' money of California by these meetings. And the senator is right. And God willing, we're not going to do that. We sent firefighters to fight this fire that had no training, absolutely no training in wildfires. Think about that. But think about the courage of those firefighters when they're up against a fire that's burning an acre every 2 seconds. And they've had no training on that type of fire. It's shameful that we would do that. It's courage above and beyond when that firefighter stands there and fights that fire. And the same firefighters are out fighting that fire in equipment that is designed for structure fires. You remember I said that the gallantry that was demonstrated was worthy of Silver Star? Those of you that were in the military know what a Silver Star is. We cannot allow, and when I say we, I mean all of us, we cannot allow the state of California to shelve this report and do nothing more about it. We cannot allow the state of California to not put in place a plan to save property and save the lives of people who live there and the lives of those that are fighting the fires. And in that report are the recommendations that are necessary. And if government doesn't do it, and government doesn't take care of it, then government has failed us. Just like they failed us when they shelved the report on the Laguna fire and the Cedar of the Pine fire. After every one of these fires, there's a report. What happened? What could we have done? And they're all gathering dust. And that is all of our faults. Because the fire is over. There's greenery coming up out there right now. You can't see it from my house. And we forget about it. When next fire comes, we're going to have more firefighters coming down here that don't have training in brush fires, that are wearing the equipment necessary for structure fires. We haven't demanded that they have the right equipment and the right precautions are taken. We haven't demanded that people are allowed to cut the necessary defensible space around their structures. And we're going to lose more people. And more firefighters are going to die, like the young firefighter from Novato. And we can't allow that. We have to make sure that we contact our representatives and tell them, don't shelve this. Get off your duff and make sure that those recommendations are carried out. Make sure our firefighters have the necessary equipment and the necessary training. And make sure that leaders that are inflexible and incompetent do not stay in those positions. Well, I probably got myself enough trouble now. If you have any questions, I'll be most happy to answer them, if I can. Those of you with guns, please leave. Yes, sir.
I have no gun. I have a simple question. You mentioned protected burns. Protected burns, depending on the fuel load, fuel type, and the environment, may imply some risk. And on the other hand, over the long term, they may be very beneficial indeed. There is information of this sort in ecological systems similar to ours, for example, in Australia. And I wonder if your committee is taking a serious look at this issue of when to do protective burns, what fuel loads, and in what kind of environments.
Well, sir, in all honesty, we did not get into it that deep. However, I am well aware that there was a burn, a controlled burn, that was started in New Mexico a few years ago. Damn near burned the state down. We're very much aware of that. Our firefighters are aware of that. They have not had the authority to do it. Now, I agree with you. They're extremely dangerous, and they can get out of hand. But if our firefighters are not allowed to work in this area, and they're not allowed to do these things, it stands even more of a chance of things going wrong. And there are areas that we can train on controlled burns. You know, in a city that I was a city councilman in for 10 years just east of here, when we would condemn a building, we would take that building and contribute it to the fire department and let them practice structure fires. And there are areas that we could work in and let the firefighters get the experience after they have the training. But I agree with you. Thank you, sir.
In the past, I've read that some damage from fires in California occurred because of protection for the kangaroo rat, preventing homeowners and other individuals from clearing about their own properties. I've heard similar cases. The firefighters on our tour yesterday said there was tremendous overgrowth of brush. Were individual and private landowners and homeowners prevented from clearing their own lands of these dangers by regulations, laws, or court decisions in this state?
Yes. Yes. Let me explain something. In my report, all the members of the commission had to turn in a report with their recommendations to the Blue Ribbon Commission. And I took a couple of studies that discussed defensible space around the house, and they recommended a clearing of 100 feet around the house, then selective clearing on out to up to 300 feet. That's not, when I say selective clearing, I mean that's trimming things down and getting stuff off the ground. And they also recommended that extra space be looked at depending upon the terrain. If your house is at the top of a hill and that fire is coming up, you need more protection there. That bill was killed in the committee about a month or so ago.
Hi.
But we're still working on it. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Jay. Hi. I ran the fire at Harmony Grove in 1996. We had all the same information from people that came from Oakland and from Malibu saying what should have been done, the airplanes, the cutting away of the brush and all that. We talked to our local legislators at that time too, but obviously that got buried. I know you weren't in office then, and I tell you that two or three more fires have happened in Fallbrook where we moved to, which you've been known about. So this has been discussed a long time in California, and federal level down, the president has the right to declare a disaster. Our area where 120 homes went down was not declared a disaster. Politics is very much into all this, as you know. And so I hope, too, that more people on all levels in all states, because we have many states represented here, can start addressing people regarding what we do about fires in this area.
During the, to answer your question, during the height of the fire, I called OES, Office of Emergency Service, and I said, are you requesting that the president declare San Diego County a disaster area? So we're looking at San Bernardino, Riverside, and Ventura counties, and I don't know that we've gotten San Diego in there. I said, well, we burned about half the county. We might want to include it. So after about 20 minutes of talking, he said, well, yeah, I think we should include that. Now, with regards to not being able to clear things, article in the paper this morning said that we have not had a firefighter as a director of CDF for, was it 18 or 19 years? Well, we now do. There's a new director of CDF appointed that is a firefighter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.